Bucham Abayim to the second and the continuing series of Shi'urim on the Gimel Ikrim Baramba, that is the series of lectures on the 13 principles of faith of Maimonides. Last week we began and we read through the first principle, which in the Shilat edition is termed HaYusod HaRishon, and we spoke about the Rambam's assertion and the fact that the Rambam actually offers proof of his assertion, that is, of the existence of God, who is actually incorporeal. That will be the second Yusorid. And the proofs that he offers are in the Guide for the Perplexed, the Ma'ir Nebuchim. There, as I mentioned last week, after setting out 26 premises, in the first chapter of section 1, he actually goes on to actually offer more than one proof of the existence of God. And these proofs are known in theology as cosmological proofs. Namely, there's an argument of the existence of God by virtue of what's called causality, determinism. In other words, this type of proof appears in many places. And the Rambam's proof, by the way, are all cosmological. There are other proofs of God. There's a famous what's called an ontological proof of God, which actually I think was thought up by someone called Saint Anselm, many years ago. And I think there are other proofs of God, but I think the ontological, cosmological proofs are the chief proofs of God. As I said before, last week, a lot of people don't believe these proofs of God anymore. And one of the reasons, I can't say the only reason is because in philosophy, certainly since since the 18th century, in fact, actually, people have cast doubt upon these proofs of God. I mean, I think the first person to have cast doubt upon the cosmological proof was actually the Scottish philosopher David Hume, who cast a doubt on the notion of determinism and causality in general. But according to most accounts of the history of intellectual thought, Hume's skepticism was somehow resolved by the famous philosopher, 18th century philosopher, Immanuel Kant. Now, you should know that the philosopher Kant was actually adored by many frum people, in particular the Yekkes, the German Jews. In fact, I don't know exactly where I actually... I don't know exactly the actual source of this. I think I saw it in a book. I don't know. I think it was actually a book of a Diane Grunberg, who once actually reported that Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, or one of the German Gedolim, actually thought that maybe they should make a bracha on Kant. Now, I don't want to insult the Yekkes, but in my opinion, that's probably the most explicit way of saying that they didn't understand anything that Kant, Kant wrote. But in my opinion, there's no doubt that Kant was actually came to deconstruct the belief in God. Whatever concept Kant had of God was a purely operational concept. It has nothing to do with any traditional notion of God, and certainly not of Elohei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. You can bet that. So those Yekkes who wished to offer a bracha on Kant either did not read Kant in the original German, or did not understand him, or neither of the above, or I don't know.
What bracha would
maybe
they say?
Maybe they were involved in Kirov. Okay, in any case,
it was Kant who invented this terminology. Kant called it an ontological and cosmological argument.
No, I think it might be, I don't know. In any case, the...
That fell into the Chorev. See, Dan Grunfeld writes that every Ben Torah should read
Yeah. Pure reason. I heard that actually the former chief rabbi of the British Commonwealth, Immanuel Jacobowitz, was named Immanuel after Kant. I heard that. I haven't checked that out, but I think that would be very, very interesting. Yeah, Dan Grunfeld says that?
In the introduction, he has a big fan.
Ah, very interesting. Very good, very good. Okay, because he's going to Shitasai, because he writes a little book about, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, and there he says explicitly that... that he wanted to offer a bracha on Kant.
Okay, whatever it is.
Okay, that yekis. Okay, now,
like this.
What is... whether people have read Kant or not read Kant is probably not relevant. I'm not saying that everyone... I'm not saying that people don't believe in God and don't accept the Rambam's cosmological prose because they've read Kant. But the fact is that what Kant has to say, in my opinion, is reflective on what people think. In other words, the fact is that the way Kant thought is the way people at least have thought since the 18th century. We might have gone beyond that, but it's going to reflect upon why, you know, we don't display the Rambam's cosmological proof on, you know, on the internet and television and the newspapers and, you know, v'yasu kulam aguda achas. So the question is, what exactly was the critique of Kant on the cosmological proof, in particular on the Rambam? I don't know if Kant mentions the Rambam by name, but the fact that the Rambam's proof of God is one of the most important cosmological proofs, I guess, in medieval philosophy. Now, Kant understood, right, I'm not going to go through the entire thing, I actually have a copy of the Critique of Pure Reason in front of me, but Kant understood, once again, like I said before, Hume, in the history of philosophy, made the claim that that which we assert a causal relationship between events is not inherent in the world. You know, if every morning I let go of my pen and drop it and falls to the floor, doesn't mean that the next day it's going to happen the same thing. So in other words, basically, you cast skepticism on the notion of causality. Causality is not an ontology. It's merely, as far as Hume is concerned, it's sort of made up by man's mind. Now, Kant, in his philosophy, entire philosophy, claims that, in fact, causality and other ways in which you think of the world are the way the mind is structured. In other words, we organize fact and construct it in a way in which this is called the transcendental idealism. It's the way we think about the world. And what Kant does in all of his works, the Critique of Pure Reasons, the Practical Reason of Ethics, is really to describe the way man thinks about the world. In other words, man has no other choice. And he thinks about the world in certain ways. Now, in the case of in the case here of events, that a person looks at the world and sees a causal relationship with events, Kant says that that's the way we look at the world. Man necessarily constructs an image of the world, right, in accordance with the way his mind looks at the world and views the world, and that in terms of causal relationships. Now, what therefore is Kant's critique of the cosmological proof? So Kant basically is of the claim of the cosmological proof. So Kant basically understands that proofs like the cosmological proof, as well as the ontological proof, is basically a syllogism. In other words, he summarizes by saying, and I'm here, a syllogism means basically if A equals B, then B equals A, then A equals B. In other words, basically it's circular logic. In other words, you haven't proven anything. All you've done is define something in a certain way that the thing meets a definition because you defined it in that way. So, for example, Kant basically says, what's the proof, cosmological proofs? He says on page 405 of the edition which I have, which is section 5, it's entitled On the Impossibility of the Cosmological Proof of the Existence of God, and is in A602 and B630. I defer to the experts on the Critique of Pure Reason. But anyway, using by translation by F. Max Muller, a Doubleday anchor book, Kant says all proofs basically run in the same way. If there is anything, there must exist an absolutely necessary being also. Now, at least I at least exist. Therefore, there exists an absolutely necessary being. In other words, that's the entire cosmological proof. In other words,
that's ontological.
This is actually the cosmological proof of God. The ontological proof basically has the same fallacy according to Kant. You're arguing by definition. But what I want to say about Kant is, Kant is really saying the same thing. No, actually, Kant's argument against it is like a little bit, it's not so clear. I never thought it was so clear, but I'm actually seeing people say it's not so clear, so therefore, you know, so, but basically, my mind is constructed, says Kant, in order to organize and to construct facts the way I see in the world. But this is only, in other words, this is, and this is fine, and this is fine and dandy, because I construct, in other words, I think of things in a causal way when I think about things in the empirical world. But for example, to use an act of causality in positing a certain being who's not empirical, and by positing that being, I posit them in a certain way, that if things exist, and therefore my cause relations exist, he must exist too, says Kant, that's a figment of the imagination. So, in other words, basically, what Kant is saying like this. If I see two events, events A and B, then I could say, of course, you know, A causes B, right? And if A causes B, there must be a C that causes A. Actually, I'm going backwards and forwards in the alphabet. But what Kant says is, in other words, I could argue that events in the physical world determine, you know, A causes B. But to, in other words, to propose that there exists such a being, which Kant calls, actually, he uses actually the Latin term, which I'll use just to sound pedantic, ens realismum, which means that, in fact, there's a most perfect being, a most real being, a most real being. So when I say that, in other words, since things cannot be an infinite number of chains of causes, right, there must be a being that causes events, and this being, of course, is the most real being. Well, why is the most real being have to exist? Why? Because since things exist, they must have a cause, and therefore there must be a real being must exist. So a certain type of a circular argument. In other words, now the fact is that even though the Rambam doesn't use it as proofs, the notion of the most real being, it's really behind the proofs of the Rambam. And I don't want to say Baruch Hashem or not Baruch Hashem, actually in chapter 20, of section 3 of the Megillah Nevuchim, the Kafir Plex, Ram there speaks about the most real being, the most perfect, the being that has the most perfect existence. And the fact is that is actually the Lashon, the language of the Rambam in the Yesod HaRishon. Remember? The Rambam says, Metzias HaBori Yishtabach, and the Rambam says two things. Number one, Rambam says, V'ush Yesham Nimtza Bo'ofen HaSholem Sheba'ofni HaMetzias. Number one, he's the most perfect. In other words, he has the most perfect existence. That's number one of the Rambam. And number two, for ilas metzias hanemtzois kulam, and he's the cause of all events. So in other words, like this, to posit that events have causality, that event A causes B, that's one thing. Kant says, I'm fine with that. But to posit a most perfect being, right, I'm not organizing anything about the sense of the world. I'm positing this most perfect being, and I'm saying he must exist because the most perfect being must be the most necessary being. So this, says Kant, is really a figment of the imagination. In other words, the reasoning of man has played games on him. And this is really Kant's argument. In other words, whether the Rambam actually refers to this most perfect being in the actual proofs, the fact is irrelevant, because we see here in the Yesod HaRishon that the Rambam actually speaks about it, and this is inherent, because the Rambam is not just making a claim that there's a causation between events. The Rambam is claiming that this thing which causes it must necessarily exist. How do they must necessarily exist? Because since it's the most perfect being, which means that it's not caused by any event, so he must exist because things exist, and therefore he must necessarily exist. Since he's defined as the most perfect being who necessarily exists. So therefore, Kant would argue that this is basically a circular argument. Now,
could I just ask, just in the cosmological proof, why is it that we said that there cannot be an infinite number of causations?
That's the Rambam. The Rambam understands that. That's what I'm saying. Well,
did we define that last week or not?
No, but the Rambam says that in the
are
proof.
We going
the Rambam says
to
the proof. No, I don't know what the Rambam says.
Why is that so? Because that's pretty important, isn't it?
No, because that's because the Rambam actually uses that. That's very important. That's one of his yesodis, the Rambam. Now, the point that you're making actually is one of the critiques of Kant's critique.
As he's coming out to ontological proof, really.
Right. In other words, what you're saying is true, and I think that, you know, the Kant scholars or the anti-Kant scholars or the theologians actually say, well, you know, but the fact is the Rambam does use that. That's why the Rambam used the eternity of time. In other words, the Rambam does use that, okay? But I don't want to be too philosophical. I'm not here to actually engage in a debate with Kant, you know, Katanti. You know, all I'm trying to say is the fact is, but Kant's all is true. In other words, you could use this quip or this quip to get out of it. But the fact is that, in other words, the general ha'ala, the general way in which Kant is understanding the Rambam, you know, it's true. I think that most people would think that, in fact, actually, in other words, we could speak about causal change, which is the way man's mind is wired and structured, but the existence of a most real being, a most perfect being, right, doesn't, in other words, is an added feature, which, you know, which is not proven, and, right.
You're just saying that it's not proven,
you're
not saying that it's not true.
Well, wait. As far as Kant is concerned, since it's not proven, therefore they haven't proven anything, and therefore for sure it's not true. But I don't want to go into, I'm not interested.
That also is not proven.
At this point right now, I'm not coming to tit-tat with Kant. Okay, and say, well, there's a product, and therefore you're a suffix too. I don't think a Baal Maimon is a Baal Maimon because I think this is a draw. Okay? But what I want is, this is what I want to get at. What I will get at is, let's even if we assume that Kant's critique is true. Okay? We have to assume that Kant's critique is true, because I think that Emunah in Judaism is not like, you know, we're taking an 80% chance that it might be true, and therefore I better, you know, be from, because on that 80% of this is true. But I mean, I've heard people making such a ridiculous, stupid argument. But anyway, whatever it is. But I can say Kurdish argument, it's not a Jewish argument. But I want to claim the following thing. If we look, in other words, if we look at the Rambam's proof as, you know, an objective proof of God, a logical, philosophical proof of God, then it could possibly be that contradicting is in order. But I don't think that we have to necessarily interpret the Rambam's proof as such. I mean, the Rambam does call it a proof, even though actually in chapter 33, the Rambam does say that Aneich V'yelecha, part of the Rambam, I think it's section 2, chapter 33 there, the Rambam speaks about Al-Sina, Yech Lecha, can be understood, says the Rambam, by demonstration as well as prophecy, as well as Nevoah. And the fact is that the Rambam lists belief in the Kodesh Baruch Hu as actually Anoich Hashem Elokecha. I mean, it is a mitzvah in the Torah. And actually thinking about the Kodesh Baruch Hu, right, is actually a mitzvah in the Torah too. That's Avas Hashem. The Rambam actually speaks about Avas Hashem in two places in the Yad HaChazaka. He speaks about it. Well, actually, Avas Hashem is actually one of the Tayag mitzvahs. He lists in the Sefer Mitzvah in I think it's mitzvah. Avas Hashem is the third mitzvah, and actually appears two places in the Yad. In the players in the Yad in Perek Beis in Yesodei HaTorah, right there, the Rambam says that the derech, the way to Avas Hashem, is a person contemplates the creation, the wisdom of creation, and therefore comes to a knowledge of God, or it's called a belief of God. And also too, the Rambam actually says this at the very end of Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Yud. There, the Rambam says that, speaks about Avas Hashem, and speaks about knowledge of Hashem as being a Avas Hashem, love of God, as being a knowledge of God, which brings about a love of God. And this knowledge of God comes when a person contemplates the, you know, the chokhmah, the wisdom of the creation. So, what I would try to understand in the Yesod HaRishon of the Rambam, perhaps maybe will sound as a chiddush, is that the mitzvah of contemplating and looking at the world, if we think about it, step number one is, the proofs of God, in a certain sense, in my opinion, you know, some people would ask the question, if I learn the proofs of God, can I make Birchas HaTorah, or whatever it is, or is it a mitzvah? The answer is, for the Rambam, certainly, I think the proofs of God are actually chelik of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. Because a person contemplates the Briah, I mean, causality is part of the Bria. And when a person contemplates the Bria, right, this leads them a knowledge of God's existence.
You don't make a bracha on Machshava.
One second. Okay. Well, I don't know, that's not true. We make a birchas haTorah. Who says according to Rambam you have to say that you have to say the Torah? But according to some Rishonim, okay, I don't want to go into big machlokes here. But actually, we make birchas haTorah without actually having to work. According to the Rambam, doesn't say that it's not clear that Rambam is going to be Rishonim, but I have to actually learn Torah right afterwards. Okay, so now that's number one, and number two, more than that. If you actually look at the Megillah Nevuchim in chapters 68 and 69 of section 1, right? Here's the thing, the Rambam there expresses two very fundamental ideas. I'm probably saying back to 69 and 68, but whatever it is. First of all, the Rambam identifies the intellect of God with God himself. In fact, the Rambam says that God's intellect is his essence, which very interesting enough seems to contradict the Rambam's negative theology that you can't describe God. But the fact is that the Rambam does with intellect, with knowledge, and I think with will too. But in other words, I'm going to speak about intellect. The Rambam identifies the essence of God with his intellect. That's, I think, in chapter 69. In chapter 68, the Rambam actually says that when man is actively thinking, he actually imitates God. Man thinks like God. That's like in the case of God, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the thinker and the thought and the act of thinking and the object of thought are all one. Says the Rambam, when man thinks and acts too, I think is the proper lemaisa, he's thinking like God. The idea between man and God is that sometimes man is not thinking. Sometimes, I mean, that used to be when people are sleeping. Rambam says today, I think most people are not thinking when they're awake. But in other words, some people never think. But anyway, but in any case, it's interesting that the Rambam identifies the act of thinking with actually God's thoughts. And I will have you know that actually the first chapter in the guide, the chapter of the Megillah Nevuchim, the Rambam defines what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man B'tzelem Elokim, the image of God. And the Rambam identifies the image of God actually with what? With man's intellect, man has seichel. In other words, man's capacity of thought is actually what's really called, in fact, actually, the image of God, the Tzelem Elokim that man has. Now, what do I glean from these three types of sources? And this is really the point that I want to make. First of all, I want to add to this, before I actually back up a little, add to this, Rabbi Sadly pointed this out to me, in the Hakdama to the Perash Mishnayos, Rambam's introduction to Perash Mishnayos, I'm in the Shilata edition. The Rambam says it's on Daf Nun Gimel, the Shilata edition, right? The Ein La Adam Im Achoch Mishtadlus Bedrisha El Yachli Boi LaShem. A person should basically focus his heart on God. Ulas Palulus Chane Elav, and should actually pray to Him. Shivaneiyah VeShireiyah. They should give Him knowledge, set Him on the straight path of knowledge. And he should actually reveal to himself the secrets of the ksuvim, like the Avraham Melach says, Gal einav bitav lois b'seir ha-secha. Actually, derech agav, this is actually in the Meir Nevuchim. In the Meir Nevuchim, the Rambam says, I think in chapter 51 of the third section, the Rambam speaks about when Kriyas HaTorah and Tefillah. The Rambam speaks about, and the Kriya Shema, a person should actually come to contemplate the Kadosh Baruch Hu in Kriya Satera, in Tefillah, in Shemana Esrei, etc., etc. Which the Rambam understood that there's an act of thinking. Now, so, in fact is, from all these sources, what do I actually glean from the Rambam? The Rambam is actually not only providing to us what he understood to be a proof in the Megillah Nevuchim. The proof is, I mean, it might be the value of the proof is not so much ontologically, what it reveals to us ontologically, but the act of proving it, actually, that represents the way in which man expresses his Tzelem Elokim and thinks like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, thinks like God. In other words, and as such, in a certain sense, constitutes the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, of the love of God, according to the Rambam. In other words, the proof not only serves, I mean, certainly the Rambam for sure felt it was a proof, but the proof not only serves as a, what we consider to be a proof, you know, revealing ontologically the truth of the world, the truth of existence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but the act of proving constitutes the act by which man is commanded, right, to discover a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to think of God. That's what actually the first Yesod is. So in a certain sense, we don't have to look at the first Yesod as being only a philosophical proof. We could learn the first Yesod as actually being an act in which man discovers the existence of God by imitating God. It's a little bit like with the definition. I mean, to catapult to the 19th century, a generation after Kant, Chaim Volozhiner, based upon a Gemara in Gittin, the Vavam Bebeg, there Chaim Volozhiner says that man learns the Torah and the Kodesh Baruch Hu repeats after him. Der Chagav, Chaim Volozhiner also begins the Nefesh HaChayim with the Nefeshim Etzelem Elokim, which is not necessarily exactly the Rambam's definition, but I would say it's a version which is actually Maimonides, a Gilgul of the Rambam's version. So, in other words, what is the answer to Kant? The answer to Kant is, in fact, actually, that Judaism is not a philosophy. Judaism understands that an axiom of theology, a principle of faith, is not necessarily a philosophical proposition, but is a way in which man is supposed to think. Is man acting through a commandment? It's an act. It's a becoming, not a being. And so, in other words, Kant's critique of the Rambam misses the halachic dimension and the realm which actually lies behind the 13 principles. For the precisely the reason is that the Rambam understood the 13 ikrim as we're going to show you as actually constitute halachas too. Not only is the first yesod a halacha of yedias Hashem anecha Hashem Elokecha, but the fact is the Rambam says, you know, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, this is a Rambam that is not known so much. In Perek Beis, the Rambam says Hilchos Avodah Zarah that part of the mitzvah of Al Tifnu El Elilim means that it shouldn't be oil on a person's machshava that God doesn't exist or that he's not incorporeal. The Rambam says it actually in Halacha Gimel of Perek Beis, which means that apikosis of the Eraisa. It's not just philosophical. So, in other words, if we understand the Yud Gimel Ikrim within the context of the halacha, so therefore, the proofs of God in the Rambam are not necessarily philosophical propositions, but they're actually halachic acts in which, by thinking of God, right, by thinking of God, man actually, performs a mitzvah, and they're descriptions of the way we look at a Kodesh Baruch Hu. In other words, and actually, we're going to meet to Hashem, actually, we go through the rest of Yud Gimel Ikrim, I'm going to define them as such. The Kasha is usually asked in Yud Gimel Ikrim, I think, missed the point of the Ikrim. The Rambam is not coming to make scientific, academic statements about Judaism, which is a way in which many people, including recent books written on the 13 principles of the Rambam, assert. That's not what the Rambam is doing. You missed the entire point of the Ikrim. My opinion, totally missed the point of the Rambam. The Rambam is actually there giving us, in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, my opinion, a phenomenological account of the active amun of the faith of the Jewish people. That's what the Rambam is doing.
Isn't it a bit of a problem, though, given that this whole discussion assumes that Kant is right, which is where we're going from?
One second.
Yeah. If Kant's critique is correct,
yes,
how can you say that you're mekayim a mitzvah by going through a thought process which leads you to the conclusion that you cannot prove that God exists? How can that be a kim of Mrs. Avis Hashem?
No, because I come to discover God that way. In other words, I might have proven I might not have proven it objectively, but in other words, by thinking of God, that's the way I'm commanded to think of God in this way, and actually my thinking is actually imitates God's thinking. In other words,
the conclusion.
No. That's not the conclusion. That's called the act of faith. That's what that faith is revealed to me. I've seen that. That's actually the revelation of Sinai is by thinking of God in that way. That constitutes the halacha act of faith.
In other words, my thinking process leads me to conclude that God may not exist. However, the revelation Sinai tells me that the thinking process.
When I step back and analyze my thought and decide, did my thought prove to me objectively that God exists? It might not. But the fact is that if I want to think of God and think of God in the way in which I'm supposed to think of God's existence, right, this is the way I'm supposed to think. Mm-hmm. And not only that, too, my thinking constitutes the act of Avas Hashem.
What was the point of the thinking?
The point of the conclusion. That's the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to think about you. In other words, we're assuming. In other words, if I assume the revelation of Sinai, Lechem Lekech is a mitzvah. In other words, how am I supposed to think of God? How am I supposed to look at the world and think of God? How am I supposed to understand the world logically and think of God and come to the conclusion that God exists? This is the way I'm supposed to think of Him. And in fact, this is the way God thinks in a certain sense. In other words,
once God's existence is axiomatic,
right,
then this process leads me to that existence.
Right, in other words, once it's been revealed to me. In other words, what I'm saying, but it's a lochet thing. It's not a, like, first of all, I mean, if you want to actually take this a little step further, right, the fact is that what did Kant try to do in the critique? Kant tried to actually go outside man's thinking and critique the way man thinks. And I would say that philosophy has rejected that. In other words, listen, I would say that if you would take a poll of people, they would say that Kant's project of stepping outside of his own thinking and looking at thought as an object of which I can think about actually is a doomed project, because I can never step outside of my thinking, because when I'm thinking about my thinking, I'm also thinking. And I would say that that's really, in fact, the true answer to Kant. I can never step out of my thinking. Because when I'm thinking about my thinking, I'm also thinking too. There's an infinite loop. So if there's an infinite loop, let's stop the loop at one point and say, how should I be thinking and how am I commanded to think? In other words, Kant's critique of the Rambam cannot be understood to be naturally the fact that Kant is reflecting a higher reality only if Kant can say that I can step out of my thinking and critique my thinking, and therefore, because of that, as you say, my thinking is incorrect. But the fact is that when I'm thinking about my thinking, that's all, you know, my critique of my thinking is also an act of thought. And I think most people would actually reject that. A good book, I mean, at Princeton, I studied Kant with Professor Richard Rorty. He wrote a book called Philosophy in the Mirrors of Nature, I think. And therefore he speaks about that the program of philosophy, which is actually probably started by Kant as a way of polishing, analyzing the way we think about the world and polishing the mirrors and trying to come to understand the most authentic ontology of man, is basically a failed project, which I think people acknowledge. So in other words, the very fact is that, I mean, that's the critique I can make on Kant. But I'm not coming to that. I'm just saying is that I don't think when the Rambam speaks about the proof of God, we have to look at it from a halacha context. This is the way the Rambam held that I'm supposed to think of the existence of God.
Mitzvah is doing the process?
Yeah, right. In this process of thinking, that's how I come to that conclusion. If you want to step out of your thinking, we might debate whether that's possible or impossible. But the fact is that that's what I would think. So in other words, what the Rambam says in chapter 33 of the Meir Nevuchim, that they can be the Adosh Lakecha can be demonstrated in addition to Nevuah, I don't think he means a demonstration independent of Nevuah. What he means is that it can be, it has a logical component. A person can come to this in a logical way, but the act of thinking, right, is in my opinion the performance of a commandment which in fact actually has its source in the revelation of Anuch Hashem Elokecha. That's what I would say. That's how I would find the Rambam. Yeah.
The bottom line is the revelation itself, really, not the proof that I can't prove God exists outside of the revelation, really.
No, I mean, right. But with
that's the bottom line.
That's what I would say, and that's how I would interpret the Rambam, and that's what I would say in the Rambam. Yeah.
I think it's still fair to say that even after the Kant's system has been deconstructed by subsequent philosophy, the subsequent Western movement of philosophy.
Right.
We still agree that to prove something that's beyond our immediate experience is still impossible.
That's true. However, we don't deny the very, we don't deny the authenticity of man's acts themselves. In other words, even if we take like the philosopher like Heidegger, say Yamach Shemai, who tries to deconstruct all of philosophy, Heidegger still speaks about what's called authentic existence. In other words, Western philosophy might have deconstructed, in other words, an objective philosophical ontology, but no one's denied the fact that man acts and that there's an essence, there's a substance to man's acts. I mean, if philosophy becomes phenomenology, right, so that just leads us in that direction that, in fact, actually the focus is really on man's acts. In fact, actually what's interesting is that if you look at the history of Jewish thinking, speaking about from the Rambam to the Ari and afterwards, actually we find actually an increasing emphasis on the acts of man as opposed to, you know, understanding God philosophically. I spoke about that in the lectures on the history of philosophy of the Kabbalah. And Mishum, I'm going to actually speak about this here in the Yud Gimel Ikra.
Are you a philosopher?
No one's a philosopher. Ari's not a philosopher, but there's certainly a philosophical import in their restatements. I can understand them philosophically. Ari's not coming to say philosophy, but every statement within the Ari has to be understood as, you know, within a philosophical context, as a reaction to the Ram, etc., etc. Okay? I advise you to hear the Shiur on the history of philosophy of the Kabbalah. I spoke about that. We're going to speak about it again here, too. So in other words, I think that the later, in other words, what I say this is that the later, you know, Balei Machshava, the later intellects, the later, you know, profound things in Judaism, history of Judaism, who come after the Rambam, right, are not necessarily arguing on the Ikrim. What they're doing is they're making the Ikrim up to date to the way, you know, to the way man thinks, the way man acts. And of course, we're going to speak about this in Mirtz Hashem. Okay, there's an evolution of the way man looks at himself, and constantly the way man relates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God. And this evolves in Judaism. And the Rambam's Ikrim are really only a first step after which this evolution of thought takes place. Yeah.
Doesn't Rambam say the first two commandments, Anochi v'lo yelecha, were heard by everybody? That means they understood it, it was intellectually...
No, the Rambam says in chapter 33, so that the Rambam is coming to answer the Gemara. The Gemara says the Chavdal and Menachas,
right.
Right. So the Rambam says, heard me Piyak Vua. The Rambam says, why me Piyak Vua? Because you don't need the Vua for this. You only need the Vua for this.
He says only?
Only, right. Losh of the Rambam, in fact, actually, let me get the Rambam.
I thought the whole point was going to be the Torah.
You don't only need the Vua. Losh of the Rambam... The Lashon of the Rambam in Perek Lamed Gimel, right, is what's the Perek Lamed Gimel? Mamatzi Hatzinai, right? He says Kishnekav El Kolay Mitzel Ube Musagim BeIyun Anoishi Kol Ma SheYadua B'Chol Mufsas Din Anav B'Din Mish Yodei Zoi Shav LeGabav. I don't know it only through Nevoah.
So that sounds like I could know without Nevoah.
No. I can know it through Nevoah. I think what the Rambam means is... No. What the Rambam... In other words, the Rambam understood for sure they don't Nevoah to, you know... I mean, I can think about God without being a Navi. That's what the Rambam means. In other words, I can go through this with thinking about the Navi. But the fact is that it's a mitzvah, Nechashem Lakecha. The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah understands the mitzvah. In other words, what I'm doing is I'm performing an act of knowing God. So in other words, even though the knowledge doesn't require nevuah, any person can do it. Every person can think about God. Only a navi. That's what the Rambam is saying. In other words, the nechesh doesn't require. But nonetheless, the fact is that in the broader context, when I do think of God, right, I'm performing a mitzvah. which is on Deich Hashem Elokecha.
Is the mitzvah, in other words, you think about God like you're saying, that's the mitzvah, but is the mitzvah of the Mahadrin when you actually have the Nebuah, when it comes down to that
Jinger? No, it's not the mitzvah of God. No, the Rambam says not like that. The Rambam says not like that. The Rambam says not like that. The Rambam says, in other words, actually, the mitzvah is really Avos Hashem, the act of doing that mitzvah. But I'm saying is, the knowledge of God is something, the act of, in other words, the act of knowing God and going through the proof is a mitzvah of Hashem, where I come to know about God. But in other words, all I'm saying in the Rambam is that even though I come to this process intellectually, that's what the Rambam means. The Rambam says, Anoshim Lakecha is I can come to that process intellectually. I don't need a revelation of Nevuah. Nonetheless, the fact is that as an ikur, as a principle of faith, this act itself is halachically defined. In other words, this is, you know, when I think about the existence of God, I'm actually imitating God's thought. So in other words, in such, it's an intellectual act, right, which constitutes the way in which I know about God, and the Rambam understands it as the mitzvah. In other words, what I get from this is as a result of an intellectual act, which is actually, the Rambam understands to be Tzelem Elokim. You know what, I'm performing an intellectual act which imitates God's thoughts itself. Yeah.
It's the first mitzvah.
Right, the first mitzvah.
Right. Besides for
Alice. No, I understand that, but no, because if I accept the mitzvah, knowing the mitzvah, no, for sure, knowing the mitzvah is the if I know the mitzvah, if I believe in God, or I accept God's existence, that's the first mitzvah. We're speaking about a proof of it, though. If I come to prove it, right, I'm performing an act of Avos Hashem. That's what I'm saying. So in other words, my contention is that even if I accept Kant's critique, let me finish. If my contention is that even if I accept Kant's critique of the Rambam, it doesn't take away from how the Rambam understood the first Yesod within the context of the Halacha. Namely, is that there's a process of thinking by which I come to know God, and this process of thinking, right, ontologically, is actually, you know, in which I'm expressing the way in which God thinks. It imitatio Dei, it imitates the way God thinks, and as such, this is the first Yesod in the Rambam. In other words, the first Yesod of the Rambam is, this is the way I'm supposed to think about the existence of God, and this is the way I'm supposed to come to reason, right, about the existence of God. That's how I understand the Rambam.
If I think about if I think about God, use my logic and come to a different conclusion, whatever, anything.
No. So
I would come to a different conclusion. No, Rambam will call me a min or call me not part of Christ.
I don't think in the way in which you do it according to the Rambam, you can never come to a different conclusion. That's what I want to claim.
So then it's not me saying that.
The critique of the cosmological proof is that not that I'm come to a different conclusion. I'm going to come to the same conclusion.
I understand.
The critique is that perhaps my means by which I did it, right, were not they're not resolved to the transcendental idealism of Kant. But in other words, I'm not going to come to a different conclusion.
But we have to say that for Rambam, the mitzvah is to think about God in the way that Rambam thought about God, not any other way.
Right. No. I understand that, but I'm saying
so it's not really thinking; it's just imitating a Rambam.
No. What's imitating the Rambam for? Otherwise, the Rambam is claiming, look, it could possibly be that people will say, come to the universe, I come to the disaster in my heart, whatever it is, there's a mitzvah pshut. No, what I'm just saying is, the way the Rambam defines the mitzvah of Avos Hashem, when speaking of God, this, within that context, constitutes what the Rambam understood to be coming to the conclusion that God exists. I might disagree with Rambam's concept of Tzelem Elokim.
Right.
But once I accept Rambam's ontology, this is what Tzelem Elokim, this is man's relationship with God, right? Then in fact, this is the God.
If Rambam would have known Kant, would he therefore say the way to come to God is to think about these things, even though really it's not emes? It's
I think in the century, he would change his proof accordingly, which we're going to speak about that in Mi'at Hashem.
I mean, would Rambam say, if I learn Perek Gimel and Dalet and Yesodei Torah, is that today doing the mitzvah of Avos Hashem? Or is that no longer relevant, so you don't hold from Ptolemy?
I would claim that you'd have to. I claim we'd have to adjust a little bit. I would claim that Rambam's the realm in which the Rambam thought.
But certainly,
after the 18th century, after the 19th century, and as we see from the from the Vishchai, even the Hasidic thought, the Raizal, right, my thought changes a little bit.
So if I had to think honestly, then I still don't understand how God said counts.
We're going to speak about that. Right now,
if modern philosophy doesn't lead me to the Rambam's conclusions.
Once again. We're going to think about how I'm supposed to think today. In other words, I'm not suggesting to people that right now in the 21st century we should think whether I'm thinking and come to that conclusion, right? What I'm saying is that the Rambam's mode of thinking, right, is going to have its variations and its applications in later on in history. We're going to see this later on in Jewish thinking.
How can I do that mitzvah in a post-Kantian world?
We're going to speak about that. We'll get to the Leshem, we'll get to the Arizal, we're going to get to everybody, okay? All I want to say is, in other words, the Yud Gimel Ikrim, right, is a modus vivendi. It's not an epistemology, but it's a basis upon which Dor Dor of the Doshav, in every generation, this is the way, in reference, in relation to that generation, or the revelations, or the Giluyim they had in every generation, right? Yachoyim speak different than the Rishonim, right? Dor Dor of the Doshav, right? We're going to see how we're going to use this, and it's going to be an invariance, invariable, right? Invariance in the way I think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what we're going to see in Meir Sig. In other words, so that's going to be my contention. My contention is just bringing a bunch of Achorinim who argue in the Rambam doesn't mean the agreement have changed. It just means is that within different contexts, right, man thinks differently, but there's a certain invariance which the Rambam actually has stated, and this is going to be invariable, an invariance in the later generations. We're going to get to that, Meir Sig. Okay?
How cosmological argument is the Rambam, or that's also Aristotle?
The cosmological argument actually appears in Aristotle.
Okay, so when he's going against, he's not just going against the Rambam.
No. Kant didn't mention the Rambam.
Right.
He didn't mention the Rambam.
Also
I'm not sure he liked Jews so much either. I think Mendelssohn beat him in an essay context. Mendelssohn beat him in an essay contest. But anyway, I'm not sure he liked Jews. But he doesn't mention the Rambam. But the fact is that it is true. We spoke about that.
Aquinas used Rambam.
What?
The basis of Aquinas is Rambam.
In other words, Aquinas learned very well the Rambam. He attacks Aquinas, Aquinas the Rambam too. But the Rambam's place is based on Aristotle. I spoke about that last week. Okay, fine. Now, what I just want to see a little further. Okay.
It is against Aristotle.
It's against anyone who makes the cosmological argument. Actually, I think in Plato's also cosmological. It's playing, right. The whole Messiah of the cosmological argument, okay? But since we're Yidden, we're learning the Rambam. The Rambam is the Rambam.
Philosophy.
What?
Like the growth philosophy.
I don't know. That's your sushtas. I don't know. Okay, fine. Okay, in any case. Okay, so now, what have we come to, at least this conclusion that I want to draw? We have here a way of looking at the Yud Gimel Ikrim. They're not informing me of facts, of objective, philosophical, well, at least the first Ikrim of facts, but they're informing me of the act of faith. Even though that act of faith might be, you know, based upon reason, based upon intellect. But in other words, an act of intellect is also an act of faith. And that's the, in other words, at all the Ikrim. When we get to the next Ikrim, two Mitzvah, Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? That's also going to have to, which we think about the world, we think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's not Ikrim are not philosophical propositions, even though they're philosophically stated, the Nusach is philosophical, but these are acts of faith, and they're based in Psukim. And based in Psukim, they constitute the way in which we learn the Torah. As the Rambam says, we have to pray, we have to daven to our Kodesh Baruch Hu that he should enlighten us. That's the Rambam's answer to Kant. Who am I davening to? I'm davening to the person who's going to enlighten me. If I daven to a person who's going to enlighten me, so of course I'm assuming the existence of God. In other words, Kant is speaking as an atheist. He's making one assumption. The Rambam's making another assumption. The very fact that the act of proof is something that a person gets by supplicating the Creator, right? It's just acknowledging the fact that even though I think in an intellectual manner, even though I go through an intellectual right methodology to arrive at my conclusion, it comes with siyata d'shmaya, right? It comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So in other words, that statement that you pointed out that it's in the Mar Nevuchim too, right, is very fundamental of the Rambam. And Therefore, we have to understand the Rambam's even his philosophical aspects of the Ikrim within this context. I think this is important.
So someone who came to the conclusion that there is a true philosophical atheist had Siyata Shmaya to come to that conclusion?
He didn't happen well. I guess he didn't happen. Anyway, whatever it is. Okay. Anyway, now, I think we're going to... with the first Ikkar, we're going to stop here. There's actually more to speak about, and actually I'm going to speak about other thinkers. We're going to go to the Yarib, the Rav Shechaim, the Balatani, the Leshem, but I think I would prefer to do that after we cover a few of the Ikkarim. Okay? So, Mitzvah Hashem, I'm going to stop at the first Ikkar now, and for the next week, Mitzvah Hashem might say Shabbos, we're going to go to the second Yesod, which is in the Shalat edition on Daf Kuf Mem Aleph, Yesod HaShayni, and that is what the Rambam calls Yichudai, which means the unity of God. Right, I don't know if that's a good or bad translation, but in any case, we're going to speak that. It's very, I just want to make the one remark that the Rambam's proof of the existence of God in the beginning of the first chapter is actually proof of two things. His existence and actually his incorporeality. And it's interesting, why does the Rambam actually state this as two separate principles when, in fact, logically, intellectually, right, they're one? So we'll speak about that in Mitzvah Hashem. Until next time, from Undisclosed Place, Yerushalayim Rav Kodesh, Hakol Tavoch.